And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
About 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on Sunday, August 14th, 2016. This is program 104 of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious and effervescent and very dimpled Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa? How are you?
Hi, Carl. I'm going to not show my dimples this evening.
Good. Spackle them up.
Got it.
And then we have Elif Garris, our producer in the booth. Hi, Elif.
Hello.
And we have special guests in the studio, which I'll tell you about a little while. We're going to listen to The Green Hornet tonight. We'll hear Suspense, and then Phil Harris and Alice Faye. Three classic radio shows all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning here on the WGN Radio Theater, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This singer-songwriter-actress stars in the upcoming TV show This Is Us, about a group of people whose paths intersect and stories commingle in intriguing ways.
All right, what do they win?
They will win a $25 gift card for Lumel Nati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza.
The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress was the lead in A Walk to Remember.
I'm so sorry. I really should have told you sooner.
No, I made you do too many things.
No,
I kept
no,
you out.
No. If anything, you kept me healthy longer.
All right. Do you know who that actress is? Call us 312-981-7200. Win a Lumel Nati's pizza. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back to show 104 of the WGN Radio Theater. Wow, we are playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's hear that movie clip one more time.
I'm so sorry. I really should have told you sooner.
No, I made you do too many things.
No,
I kept
no,
you
no,
out.
No. If anything, you kept me healthy longer.
Let's talk to Annie out in Evanston. Hi, Annie.
Hi, how are you?
Great. We're glad to have you with us, and we're hoping that you recognize that actress's voice.
Yes, it's Mandy Moore.
Yes, Mandy Moore is correct, and you are a winner. You have won a $25 gift card for Lumel Nati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, my favorite deep dish pizza, and you can check them out at lumelnatis.com and visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Annie, thank you. We hope you appreciate a pizza, and we certainly appreciate you listening to our show.
Awesome. Thank you. Love
Take
you guys.
Care. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Annie. All right. It's time for our first classic radio show,
Yay.
The Green Hornet. It started as a radio program. It did move to television for one season. And you know who played Cato on television, Lisa?
Well, we were just talking about it. So.
Well, do you know who it was?
I do, because you just mentioned it.
Bruce Lee on television. Van Williams, of course, played the Green Hornet. But on radio, he was played by Al Hodge, who later played Captain Video. In fact, we have a picture of him on the Facebook page as Captain Video. You'll see Al Hodge. Let's tune this in. Go back to 1939, October 31st, for the parking lot racket. Here's part one of The Green Hornet.
The Green Hornet. He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies that even the G-men cannot reach, the Green Hornet. With his faithful valet Cato, Britt Reid, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. Ride with Britt Reid as he races toward another thrilling adventure. The Green Hornet strikes again.
Hurry, Cato. We're out to smash a parking lot racket.
$1, $2, $3, $4, $5, $6, $7, $8, $9.
I want 10% from every parking lot in the city, understand?
We're getting them lined up fast, Bleeker.
You gotta make it faster. Get out and start collecting that dough. I want more money coming in. 35, 40,
45, 50, 55,
60, 65, 70, 75. Where's that dough, Carson?
I'm not paying any money for racketeers like you.
We'll be back to persuade you. No!
They won't listen to reason. Smash a couple of the cars. Throw a couple of bombs. Start a few fires. They'll lay it on the line.
20, 230, 240, 250, 260, 270, 280,
290.
Here's the parking lot. Toss
that bomb.
Here she goes. A bomb! Wreck the cars! It's them racketeers!
500,
550,
600, 650, 700,
750, 800. Some blasted rat's going to slash all the tires in the lot. That'd pay plenty for this.
Morning, Blake. How's your parking lot going?
What's you bleeding?
10%, Blake. Pay it and you won't run into grief with your parked cars.
All right, you got me. I'll pay. 10, 20, 30.
40. 4,500.
5,000.
Pay up.
5,000.
Pay for protection.
Wreck cars. Ruining my business. 10% or out. Okay, I'll pay.
You win. Go for the racket. Kick in.
10%.
Here you are.
Don't smash any more cars.
I'll pay.
Hand the dough over.
Here's the money.
There we got a wind up. Count the money, mate.
19,000.
20,000. Look at it pile up.
20,000. Look at it pile up.
Granny, these we must have driven downtown early.
Why, expert? No earlier than usual.
But then, holy crow, at first the parking lot so empty. You don't think to... Say, Reed, today and Sunday, is it? Don't tell me we made a mistake and come down to the Sentinel on Sunday.
Why not? The Sentinel's a daily paper. They're plenty down on Sunday.
Suffering snakes. I never come down
on... Relax, expert. It's not Sunday.
But look it. There ain't hardly six cars in the parking lot.
Morning, Mr. Reed.
Hello, Schaefer.
What are you wearing the long face for, Schaefer? You're looking like a candidate for the morgue with the other cadavers.
You better go to that parking lot across the street, Mr. Reed.
What?
I can't handle you here.
Suffering snakes, what are you trying to do? Don't you like us? Or maybe Reed's sedan ain't good enough for your parking lot, giving us the cold shoulder.
Shut up, Oxford. Can't you see something's wrong?
Huh? Oh, golly, is there?
Why can't we park here, Schaefer? There's plenty of room.
Yeah, after all the accidents I've been having.
Yeah, we've heard about them at the Sentinel.
So the city. They may take away my parking lot license.
Golly.
The insurance company has already turned me down as a bad risk. So since you're a particular customer of mine, you'd be better off at another parking lot.
Your license hasn't been revoked yet, has it?
Not yet.
I have my own insurance on the car.
Hey, Reed, where are you going?
Get out, Oxford. We're parking the car here.
Mr. Reed,
car's yours, Schaefer. I'll call for it at the end of the day.
Suppose something happens.
What about these other cars?
Well, I told them the same thing, but
They wouldn't listen, eh? Well, put me down as the same kind of sucker, then, Schaefer.
Well, this is swell of you, Mr. Reed.
You see, Schaefer, I know something about those accidents.
Got it, Reed, the way you say it, you don't mean accidents.
I don't. You've heard of Bleeker.
You mean the racketeer?
He's behind your trouble, isn't he, Schaefer?
I won't pay that dirty rat one red cent.
I thought that was it.
10% he wants for protection. Protection.
Holy crow, why don't you tell the police?
I've told everyone. What good does it do me?
No, don't tell me he's bribing the police.
Of course not, Oxford, but Bleeker's smart.
That's it. Everybody knows he's pulling the racket. But how can you stop it when you can't get proof that it's his guerrillas who go around smashing cars and cutting up the tires in parking lots?
You've heard that happen?
Oh, everything.
And still you refuse to knuckle under?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you ought to pay the 10%.
Yeah, you've fought them this far. Why lose your fight now?
I wouldn't mind if it was fight, so long as it was a fair fight. But them rats work in the dark.
And the police can do nothing, huh?
Not a thing.
I see.
Hey, Reed, what are you daydreaming about?
Daydreaming?
You had a kind of faraway look in your eye, like you was up to something. Only just when I was getting me brain around to figuring out what, you lost that faraway look, and golly, now I can't tell.
You'll just have to wait till that look comes back.
Ah, you got something up your sleeve, I know it.
Just as well you're not a mind reader, actually.
Huh?
There are times when I like to keep my thoughts to myself. And this is definitely one of them.
Letters, letters, and more letters.
How do you bake a chicken pie? Is barbecued beef made in barbershops? Gunnigan, if you keep grinning at me, I swear I'll get the screaming memes.
Don't you like my offers, Miss Gaze?
No, but even less do I like handling this cooking advice for the homebody column.
It's only for one day. Somebody had to take Miss Topper's place.
Good grief. Why does Mr. Reed have to pick this one day to be out of the office? Leaves me with so little work on my desk that I just couldn't excuse myself from this.
Casey, why don't you take those letters back where they belong?
I like it better here.
This is the city editor's cubbyhole. My cubbyhole.
It could do with a good cleaning.
Don't go domestic on me.
Why not? I'm reading very domestic letters.
Miss Topper's desk is out in the city room. See? Through the glass. Out there.
It's too drafty. I like it better here. Or did I say that?
You did.
Well, here's a typewritten letter. Most of them are in longhand.
All right. One housewife can have a typewriter. No law against it.
Well, let's see what recipe she wants.
Go ahead, Casey, but never mind the talk.
Okay, I won't bother you.
Casey, what's the idea of knocking the typewriter table over? If that's your substitute for talk, you...
Gunnigan, this letter...
What's the matter with you?
Why, it's from a man. Not a woman, a man.
So what? Men are interested in cooking?
Read it. Go ahead.
Listen, I have a front page makeup to schedule.
Read it. Does it say what I think it does?
In cooking up a stew about... Oh, Casey, I'm not interested in this hooey.
Good grief, will you finish? There's more.
In cooking up a stew about a certain type of racket now being worked... Jump in blue blazes. It's about the parking racket.
That's what I read, too. I couldn't believe it, but look. Look at the signature.
Signature? Well, I'll be a first cousin to an animal trainer. It's signed the Green Hornet.
That's what I thought. The Green Hornet.
That crew's got a sense of humor. Sending it to the Hints for Housewives column.
It's the first time anything sensational came to this column since that cook sent in a recipe for hot buttered scones.
Never mind the banter. This is big.
Where are you going?
Larry! Hey, Larry!
Yeah.
Take your elbows off that desk and come in here. Casey, get on the phone and call the studio.
What for?
Get him! Tell him I want a stamp made of this Hornet letter. Half tone for the front page.
Right. Give me the darkroom operator.
What's the 4-star special, Chief?
Get in here and close that door. We got a note from the Green Hornet.
Huh? Holy mackerel.
The door!
What about? What did it say?
Here, read proof on it yourself.
Oh, darkroom. Send a boy to the city desk. There's a rush job on the snapshot, and Gunnigan's waiting.
Well, is that something?
Great guns. According to this, the Hornet's coming right out and saying he's going to take that racket away from Bleeker.
One crook fights another.
That's going into print in the Sentinel.
Are you sure this is on the level, Gunnigan? It hasn't got a Hornet seal.
Gosh, that's a thought.
Yeah, why isn't Reed here? He's an authority on the Hornet notes. He'd check the paper it's written on.
I don't know where he is.
Holy cow, Gunnigan! Guess what?
Expert, this is no telephone booth. Get back!
Reed, glad you're here.
Boss, take a look at this.
We run into more excitement, it seems.
More? There can't be more.
What this guy's got to show you is more exciting than anything you got, Gunnigan.
What guy?
Who is he?
His name's Schaefer. He runs a parking lot across from the Sentinel building.
A parking lot? Well, that's just what we were talking about.
He got a threatening letter.
What?
Yeah, he's going to get dough from me or else.
Now, wait a minute. One thing at a time. Reed, we got a letter, too.
I'm telling you, it can't be as important as this, Gunnigan. Why, golly, Schaefer got a threat from the Green Hornet.
So what? The letter we got... What? What's that?
The Green Hornet.
Yes, Gunnigan. Axford and I got into the parking lot when he was looking it over.
What are y'all staring at us for?
Because, you big lug, this letter is from the same writer.
Holy crow!
The Hornet? You must have mailed them both at once, boss.
Hey, let me see that. I'll compare them. Yeah, there's no doubt, Gunnigan. These are identical. Same paper.
The Hornet?
I'm as certain as if I had written these myself.
That's bad business, Mr. Reed. I've been standing off Bleeker, but now if the Hornet's stepping in, I'll be getting from two racketeers.
You keep your chin up, Schaefer. When the Sentinel prints this and the news gets around, Bleeker and the Hornet may battle it out just long enough for the cops to pick up the remains.
Britt Reed returned to his apartment that evening and spoke to Cato, his valet and the only living man to know him as the Green Hornet.
Cato.
Yes, Mr. Britt.
The Sentinel's out in the street with the two Green Hornet notes I wrote. It's time for us to get moving.
You want a black beauty?
The car and the mask, too. I'll need the gas gun as well. Bleeker is reading the Sentinel himself, like everyone else in town. We've got to be ready for him.
Bleeker! Bleeker!
Don't shout your lungs out, mate. I already saw the Sentinel with them two Green Hornet notes. That guy's got a nerve.
You gonna let him step in?
I was just talking to Hackley.
You want the car?
The car, sure. I want you and Dirk to bring your guns. We're going to be ready for the Green Hornet.
A lot depends on how Schaefer reacts, Cato. He's almost at the end of his rope. He can't hold out against those racketeers much longer.
He's a brave man.
Yeah, he's taken a lot from those rats already. Cars smashed, tires ripped open. His business is practically sunk.
That is true.
Unless I'm mistaken, Bleeker's going to make it even tougher now that he believes the Green Hornet is muscling in on his territory.
I see.
Open the sliding panel, Cato. We're going to the hiding place of the Black Beauty.
Where are we going?
Bleeker is just the kind of gorilla to make sure that Schaefer doesn't slip out from under him now. He wants whatever extortion money Schaefer is paying out for himself. And it's up to the Green Hornet to stop him.
It all depends on that mug Schaefer. We've been putting enough pressure on him to make him ready to crack wide open.
His business is shot already. He can't keep holding out.
He's got plenty of what it takes.
He's due to crack. But get this. Schaefer's paying us, not the Hornet. Nobody's muscling in on us.
We better get moving.
Where's the car?
In the garage, waiting.
Okay. Open the door, May.
Where are you going, Bleeker?
Me and the boys are paying a little social call on Schaefer.
Got the car all ready, boss.
All right. Get in. Take the wheel, Dirk.
You better be careful when you get to Schaefer's parking lot, Bleeker. The cops can read the papers, too.
We'll wait until it's clear for us to go in and talk to him, May. Get going, Dirk. We're going to stop that crook that calls himself the Green Hornet.
As Bleeker's car swung into the street and turned toward Schaefer's parking lot, a huge, sleek black car started along behind them. It was the car of the Green Hornet. The curtain falls on the first act of our Green Hornet adventure. Before the next exciting scenes, please permit us to pause for just a moment.
All right, to the Flight of the Bumblebee music there by, I think that's like...
we talked about that.
Gosh, who is that? I don't know.
Yeah,
I'll think of it.
Some Italian composer.
Yeah, somebody. Yeah. I'll think of it, actually. That's the first portion of The Green Hornet from October 31st, 1939. Rimsky-Korsakov.
Oh, there you go.
Parking Lot Racket by The Green Hornet, and that's Al Hodge as The Green Hornet. As I said, a picture of him on our Facebook page. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back here on the WGN Radio Theater. I want to say hello to my good friend, Scott Zuckerman, who is the CEO of Mies Meals. And you hear us talking about Mies Meals a lot here on the WGN Radio Theater. Scott, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Carl. So great to be here again.
Yeah, and you have brought a good pal of yours, Katie Schwartz. And Katie is here as well from a company called Purple Asparagus. Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
All right. So we have a special promotion that we're doing here on WGN for Mies Meals. You've heard us talk about it. And that is when you go to the Mies Meals website, it's Mies, M-E-E-Z, meals.com. You can get dinner for two delivered to your home absolutely free by putting a promo code radio in. But we have something special because Katie is here for our listeners through the end of August. Right, Lisa?
Yeah, we want to talk to Katie because we want to know a little bit about Purple Asparagus and how Scott from Mies Meals gives back to the community through Purple Asparagus.
So, Scott, tell us a little bit about Mies Meals and then the promotion, and then we want to talk with Katie a little too.
So Mies Meals, as you have heard, is a meal kit delivery company serving all of Chicagoland. And in addition to providing people with healthy, nutritious, tasty meals, we find it important to give back to the community. Chicago's given a lot to us, and so we have formed a partnership with Purple Asparagus, and that's our way to do it. And
yeah.
So tell us what Purple Asparagus is.
So Purple Asparagus works with local schools in the Chicagoland area to provide education and information about healthy eating that's good for the community, for families, and the planet. And Katie is here. She's actually the expert, so she can probably tell you more.
So Katie, tell us why it's important for everybody to sit down and have a home-cooked meal together.
Well, studies show that if you're cooking at home rather than getting food, going out to eat, getting food to go, or eating those frozen meals with all the processed ingredients, you're more likely to be more healthy. You're getting healthy whole foods, less ingredients, less unknown ingredients that you're ingesting and fueling your body with.
Yeah. And so with Purple Asparagus, you're a nonprofit organization and you've teamed up with Mies Meals. And we have a special promotion going through the end of August. In addition to our regular promotion, Scott, tell us a little bit about that.
So if you go to Mies and you sign up as a new customer with the code WGN, so you enter the promo code WGN for your first order, every recipe that you choose, we are going to donate a meal to a student and their family that's part of the educational programming that Purple Asparagus offers in lower-income areas throughout Chicago.
Right, and here's the great thing. If you go to the Mies Meals website, and we have this special promotion, right? So you can try Mies Meals absolutely free for the first time. You get a dinner for two delivered to your home, no cost. You just put in the promo code radio, but if you put in the promo code WGN, from now until the end of August, what happens is Mies Meals donates through Purple Asparagus another meal to a student and their family, correct?
That's right.
All right. So there you go. Very good.
I just want to be clear so it's not confusing. So through the end of August, it would be great to put in promo code WGN, because that way not only will you get the same free meal that you would have chosen from the website, but in addition, you're going to be sending a meal to a low-income family in the Chicago area that is a part of the Purple Asparagus program.
Exactly.
Okay, so we're going to be promoting that through the end of August, and we are so excited to offer that opportunity to our listeners and, of course, to the Purple Asparagus schools.
And how many schools are you working with?
We have 15 partner schools right now.
Mostly in Chicago.
We have a few out in the near suburbs, but most of it's in Chicago, all over, north side, west side, south side.
Right. Yeah. Now is the time. I mean, Roger is a customer. Roger Badish
is
a big fan of Mies Meals. We are all big fans,
yes.
Lisa and I and Mike, Estella and Aleph. So you should really try Mies Meals, folks. It's a terrific way, especially if you're ordering food once in a while during the week, if you order in. This is the best company to do this from, because it's not only nutritious and healthy, but you can get it for free the first time. They are so confident you're going to like Mies Meals that if you go there and order the first time, it's absolutely free. Get dinner for two delivered to your home.
Yeah.
And it
so
gets delivered
say, yeah,
in this
check
great...
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it gets delivered to your home in this wonderful cooler.
Like a cooler with ice packs. So you should go right now. Go to MiesMeals.com, MeezMeals.com, and check out the menu. I did it today, and I ordered today for my next week, and I ordered a balsamic chicken, and I ordered some kind of a tofu peanut kebabs. They sound delicious, but of course there's 10 or 12 more items in addition to what I chose. So I hope that you'll check out the website, order something, not only get a free dinner for yourself, but of course send a dinner to another family.
Yeah.
Can I add one thing? Because I think we're missing out on this. A lot of people hear, foods delivered to your home, Mies Meals and everything. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the easiest meal you will ever cook. Everything comes portion prepared. All you have to do is snip the packages open, read the instructions, bake it, cook it, whatever you got to do according to the directions, within 20 minutes at the most, you've got dinner for two. And it's delicious and, as you say, healthy. And there's nothing better in the world. Usually you end up with a kitchen with, like, stuff all over the place and a mess and you didn't mix it right and everything.
Yeah.
This thing is perfection personified. It's the easiest thing in the world to do.
Wow.
Roger.
That's quite an endorsement.
Thank you, Roger.
There's nothing to say after that.
And you know what? We've been saying it for months. Mies Meals is so confident you're going to like their product that they want you to try it for free. I mean, what better way to get you to try it than free? So just go to Mies, MeezMeals.com, order dinner for two, delivered to your home, no charge. Put the promo code WGN so that a student can eat absolutely free as well. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. It's 11:38 here on a Sunday night, and we are tuning into the Green Hornet. A little later, we'll tune into Suspense, and then Phil Harris and Alice Faye, Lisa and I and Elif will be here till 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's time now for the conclusion to the Green Hornet. This is called Parking Lot Racket from October 31st, 1939.
Now to continue our story. In the Black Beauty, Britt Reed and Cato trailed the racketeer's car until they were certain Bleeker was heading for Schaefer's parking lot.
Keep watching them, Cato. If they turn that next corner, there won't be any doubt about where they're going.
Yes, sir.
Fortunately for us, it's too late for there'll be much traffic on the streets. Otherwise, we might be running constant risk of being recognized as the Green Hornet.
Mr. Britt.
What is it?
The car.
Oh, yes, Bleeker. He's turned the corner, Cato, heading for Schaefer's lot. Quick, turn in this alley.
But, Mr.
Britt. Do as I say. Swing the Black Beauty in here. Hurry before we're past it. Good enough.
I don't understand.
Why, we didn't continue after them?
Yes, but...
Those three crooks were desperate men, Cato. They're sure to be heavily armed. If the Green Hornet walked in on them, we'd run into a hail of lead. I'll wait here a few minutes to give them time to get to where they're going. I'm going into that drugstore to make a phone call. And I want to be certain Bleeker is there when that phone rings.
There's Schaefer talking to a cop. Come on.
Who's going to take care of the cop, Bleeker?
I'll handle him.
This way. We can get around behind the shack he uses for an office and slip up on him before they know it.
They're standing right next to the door.
Take care of that cop before he spots us, Dirk. I don't want any interference when we start talking to Schaefer.
The tap over the head will take care of him.
Take it easy now. Here's the shack. Head around this way so we'll come right up behind him.
There ain't nothing happened yet, Schaefer. And there won't be nothing. You got police protection now.
Protection? Why don't you get those racketeers?
We'll get them. We need proof, that's all.
Bleeker. And now the Green Hornet.
Let him make one slip and we'll pick him up so fast you won't see him for the dust.
Meantime, my business is ruined.
You're okay now. I got that.
Take him.
Look out.
What the?
No, you don't, copper.
Oh,
you inside, Schaefer.
Oh. You hit him with a blackjack. I saw it.
Inside.
What do you want?
Let me do a job on him, boss.
Keep an eye on that cop. I don't want him coming to and identifying us.
Okay, Bleeker.
You can't shut me up. I'll tell the police.
As long as the cop didn't see us, you can blab all you like.
It's your word against ours, Schaefer. That ain't worth talking about.
What are you after?
Well, we've been after all along since we started giving your place a works.
Extortion money. I won't pay.
You're a tough nut, but we can crack you.
Or maybe you got a reason.
Huh? Reason?
Don't play dumb. Are you already paying off?
No.
Maybe you got the Hornet behind you.
I don't deal with crooks. Any crooks.
If you figure paying the Hornet will keep us away, get it out of your head. We're controlling the parking lots, and the Hornet ain't stopping us.
Where is he?
I don't know. I never saw him.
We read the Sentinel. You got a note from him.
Where is he?
I tell you, I don't know. Sure, I got the note, but I didn't see him.
You're paying us and nobody else, see?
The phone...
Get away from that. I'll answer it. Keep your gun on him, Hackley.
Right.
Hello, Schaefer parking lot.
Let me speak to Schaefer.
Who wants him?
This is the Green Hornet.
The Green Hornet?
What?
Don't move.
Green Hornet, huh? I got your note.
Is this Schaefer?
Yeah, this is Schaefer talking. You calling about the note?
When are you going to pay up, Schaefer?
Pay up? Well...
Don't stall. You agreed already.
Oh, so I agreed to pay you, did
I? Don't back out.
No, I ain't backing down. Sure, I'll pay you, sure. When are you coming around to collect?
Sometime this week.
Okay, Hornet, I'll pay you. I'll have the dough for you.
When?
When? How about tomorrow night? Yeah, tomorrow night, say around midnight. How's that?
I'll be there, Schaefer.
Okay, Hornet. Tomorrow night.
He's coming here, Bleeker? Tomorrow night?
It was a Hornet, Hackley. He took me for Schaefer. So you was planning on paying the Hornet off, huh, Schaefer?
I'm not paying anyone.
The Hornet's coming here tomorrow, midnight. You have the dough ready for him, Schaefer, like you said you
were. I tell you, I'm not paying
it. I was just talking to him.
Hey, boss.
Yeah?
If we tell the cops, they can make a pinch.
The Hornet?
Sure, he's due here. The cops can nab him like that. It'll get him out of the way for a long time.
Listen, Hackley. The Hornet's a crook and so are we.
Everybody knows that.
When I tell you to talk, I'll tell you, Schaefer. We're not telling the cops, Hackley.
But we got
this is our job, taking care of rats who try to cut in. We look after that baby ourselves.
Yeah, I guess that's the regular way.
It is. We'll be here and Schaefer ain't blabbing a word to nobody.
No?
You ain't got the nerve, Schaefer. I thought you were tough.
But from what the Hornet said over the phone, it was him behind you that was giving you a backbone.
Sure. Otherwise, Schaefer'd have folded up like the rest of them parking lot owners when we put the pressure on.
Yeah. Schaefer, you'll keep your mouth shut. Because, you know, if you don't, we'll shut it for good.
And if we don't, the Hornet will.
So you're playing ball with our team, see? The Hornet's coming here tomorrow night, and we'll be around to meet him with a dose of lead.
Miss Kate, where's Reed?
Well, he left about an hour ago, Gunnigan.
Or where?
I don't know.
Well, get him. Try his apartment. Try every place.
I already have, but it's no soap, Gunnigan. I wanted to get in touch with him on another matter, and I couldn't locate him.
He's missing something.
Don't tell me it's another Hornet note.
More than a note this time, Casey.
Good grief, you mean they got the Hornet?
Yep. Well, that is, practically.
When?
About 7 hours from now. They're brushing out a cell at headquarters already.
7 hours? I thought it was in the past, not the future.
Casey, by the time tomorrow's Sentinel comes out, it will be over. The Green Hornet will be a crook with a past. And no future.
There isn't much future in Bars.
Bars, my foot. That baby will get the chair.
Where are they going to pick him up?
Right across the street.
What?
Right there. Shaver's parking lot, midnight tonight.
But how do the police know?
For a very good reason, Casey. The Schaefer told them.
Schaefer himself?
In person. Apparently that guy has more fight than the Hornet and those other rats gave him credit for. They took it for granted he'd be too scared to spill. But they took it wrong.
They? I thought you said it was the Hornet.
Did I forget to mention Bleeker?
What? Bleeker, too?
The works, Casey. Will this make a headline for the public gaze? I might try an experiment on this yarn. Slap the headline that new red ink instead of black.
Got it all settled already, haven't you?
By gravy, Casey. You don't seem elated. Wake up! The Green Hornet's going to be captured.
Yes, I can see that, and frankly, I'm a little bit sorry.
Oh, you dames. You think he's a knight in armor.
No, in a mask. Honestly, he's not as bad as he's painted.
No, he's worse.
Hey, Gunnigan, you've been looking for me.
I'll say I have, Laurie. Where have you been?
Downstairs in a place.
Never mind, I know. You have an assignment tonight.
Tonight? I was going to the fights.
Throw the tickets in the ash can. This assignment is a racketeer roundup.
Bleeker?
Not only Bleeker, my little news hound. The big bug as well.
Huh?
The Will of the Wisp, known as the Green Hornet.
Holy mackerel, Chief. When? Where?
You'll get the details later. Just be at Shaver's parking lot with the police tonight.
Will I? This is better than any fight.
Looks like the finish of the Hornet.
Where'd you get the tip, Gunnigan?
From Axford. He was at headquarters with his pal Doyle when Schaefer came in.
Axford?
Good grief, Gunnigan. That big lug couldn't get anything straight.
He's always wrong. It's probably a month from tonight. Schaefer never said anything, and besides, it wasn't the Green Hornet in the first place.
Sure, that's how Axford's tips always turn out.
This time, it's accurate.
I wouldn't bet a plug nickel on anything that guy...
Lowry, I'm not a fool. I know how Axford is. So I spoke to Doyle myself. This tip is authentic, the real McCoy.
Well, that makes a difference.
It does, plenty.
We'll hold page one open.
Gosh, I wish I could get in touch with Mr. Reed. He'd want to know about this.
He'll read it in tomorrow's Sentinel.
Reed's plain out of luck, Casey. But what's the difference? He'll still be able to pay the reward for the capture of the Hornet. Now get going, Lowry. Over to police headquarters.
I'm on my horse. Schaefer's parking lot, midnight. I'll be there.
No, there's no sign of anything yet. It's only 10 o'clock. What time are you cops going to show up? Yeah, they said they'd be here around 12, but you better go over early. Huh? Be here before midnight? Okay, Sergeant, so long as you grab those crooks. Sounds sensible. Cops not wanting to get here too soon in case Bleeker and the Hornet have someone watching.
I want you, Schaefer.
You!
Get outside.
You said 12 o'clock.
It was our sight. Don't try anything like come out. There's a man out there with a gun on you.
Yeah, I see him. Another man with a mask.
Keep him there. I'll be out in a moment.
Closing the door of the shack, Britt Reed took down the one window shade in the small office and replaced it with another he had prepared. Then he shifted the desk lamp around. A few moments later...
All right. Get back inside, Schaefer.
You put out the lights.
I don't want you making any phone calls between now and midnight.
A gun!
Take it!
Yes, you... I can't breathe. All
right. To the Black Beauty.
It's all ready, Mr. Britt?
I fixed the window shade, Cato. I didn't like the gassing, but it was necessary for our plan.
We're coming back?
According to the way you prepared the gas, Schaefer should be unconscious till around midnight. When he recovers, he'll put on the lights.
By that time, Bleeker and his rats will be here.
We come back?
Yeah, the Green Hornet will be here at midnight, Cato. But not in person.
We got all the men placed around the parking lot. But where's Schaefer?
Was he going to be here?
Darling, that's what he said, Lowry. But there ain't no lights, not even in the shack.
Almost 12. Come on, we'll go in.
Oh. Holy crow, what's that?
Turn on the light.
Schaefer, what happened?
I'm all right. The Green Hornet.
Trouble and snakes, was he here already?
He asked me and left. What time is it?
It's almost 12. Hey, we better get out of here with the cops.
Right, come on.
You stand right here outside the door where you told them crooks you would be.
We'll have you covered.
Okay. Remember, the cops want to catch the Hornet as well as Bleeker.
Yeah, I got it.
Car coming.
Stay here, Schaefer.
We'll be here within earshot.
Hey, Lowry, I just noticed don't something.
Stay here, you lug. Come on, out. Back out of sight.
Come on, Dirk. Hackley.
Who's that?
Okay, Schaefer. Is the Hornet here yet?
He was here. Now he's gone.
What? So you called him after we left?
Oh, I didn't.
Oh, then he'll be back, huh?
I guess so.
Yeah, we'll get him. He ain't cutting in on us. But right now, hand over that dough.
Wait a minute,
We wrecked your cars a couple of times already, Schaefer. Pay for protection or we'll do our final job.
Hey, boss.
Pay that dough you got for the Hornet. You'll take care of him when he shows up.
Boss, it's a Hornet.
Huh? I didn't hear nothing.
Sure, he's been here all the time.
What?
Look there, boss. See the lighted window of the office shack?
What the?
There's his shadow. You can see the profile of the mask. He's holding a gun.
Listening, huh?
Yeah. He don't know the light makes his shadow a perfect target.
Well, what are you waiting for? Blast him to bits.
Right through the window.
That does it.
Hey, he ain't falling down.
He's got to. I caught him square. I can see the bullet holes in the window shade.
Come on inside. We'll finish him. You too, Schaefer.
Stick him up.
Well, I'll be a Dutch uncle. Look at that.
What the?
The cops.
We're trapped.
Let's make a break for it.
Hey, where are you?
Drop that gun.
Take it.
No, don't hit me. You got us.
Dead to rights, you rat. We heard what you said to Schaefer.
Get moving. Take these crooks to the jug.
Okay, Sarge.
Come on.
Hey, what about the Hornet? I heard those crooks say he was in here.
Yeah, I saw him in the window. But where's he gone?
There wasn't no one here when Bleeker shoved me in.
Hey, Lowry. Holy crow, will you look at this window shade?
Window shade? Axford, you gone bats?
Here, you can see for yourself. I tried to tell you I seen it from the outside, but you yanked me away.
Holy mackerel. A paper cutout of the Hornet pasted on the window shade.
You must have done that earlier. That's what Bleeker shot at from outside.
Blast it, I don't know how, but the Hornet must have got suspicious.
Sugar and snakes, Lowry. We better give Gunnigan the story. But golly, what kind of story is it when we ain't nabbed the Green Hornet?
The story you have just heard is a copyrighted feature of the Green Hornet Incorporated. The situations and characters depicted in this drama are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons or events of the past or present is coincidental. Field and Farrington speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That's the Green Hornet from October 31st, 1939, with a parking lot racket starring Al Hodge. And I never ceases to amaze me, Lisa, when I listen to some of these shows, some of these dramatic shows that were sort of aimed at a younger audience. They would always have the bad guy talking like this, you know, hey, Green Hornet did. I'm going to get that Green Hornet
guy. Sure did.
And then the good guys always talked like this.
Like you.
Even the women kind of talked like that. They were like, you know, kind of hard women, you know, like you.
Like me. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how they did that. They wanted the kids to know who the good guys were and who the bad guys
make
were on the show.
Very clear.
Yeah, yep. Hope you enjoyed that Green Hornet episode. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Oh, gosh, who sings this? This is don't tell me. Is it the Bangles?
Yes.
Ah, the Bangles.
I knew you'd know who it was.
This is his era.
Those girls were... I'd date them. Every one of them. Yeah.
How many times has he said that, Ella? Oh, I'd date her.
I don't know, but
you
I...
can't count anymore, right?
Listen, I believe in the shotgun approach. You put the vibe out there to 50 million girls, and some of them will say yes.
One might do it.
Yeah, you know, I don't believe in the rifle shot thing. The rifle shot, you throw that vibe out there, shotgun, boom, you know, and then hopefully you get a yes. Somebody
that might not be a good analogy.
Yeah, well, nah.
I'm just saying.
All right, so when we come back from the news, Roger's shaking his head up there.
Leave me out of this.
Roger, you know what I'm saying. You put the vibe out to 50 million girls, and then, you know,
I understand what you're saying.
Right?
But.
You put that vibe out there. Wait,
finish your thought, Roger.
Out there. I'll what?
You said but. But when you hear, I want to hear.
You know, shotgun and dating girls, not really something you want to put in the
same. That's what I said. Not a good analogy.
Well, look, what I'm saying is a shotgun has many, many little babies.
I know the point you're trying to make.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, but bad analogy.
I think maybe a better choice of words.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
You like to spread the love all around.
Yeah. Oh,
hoping
yeah.
to attract his
yeah,
many...
baby.
Oh, he spreads the love,
never
Roger. Won.
Oh, you spread something around. I'm telling you.
How about that song that's like
Yeah. By Yellow.
Yeah.
That's Yellow sings that.
Oh,
look at him,
so,
Mr. DJ.
Man. So I just need a little Cavassier, and then I could, spread the love.
Yeah, you might need a lot more than that.
Yeah, that's right,
I'm sorry,
Roger.
What?
What was that character played by, on Saturday Night Live?
Oh, right.
Remember?
They made a movie out of that.
Oh,
bit.
Right.
Yeah, Mr.
Gosh, he was the love.
Oh,
something.
The ladies' man.
The ladies' man.
Yeah.
And he had his Cavassier.
I think that's your new title.
Yeah, the ladies, man.
The ladies, man.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
All right. When we come back, it's suspense. You're gonna love it. And then Phil Harris and Alice Faye.
Yeah.
Your voice is about the same octave there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That's a lot
We're all trying.
Yeah. That's a lot of, oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Esmeralda, would you like to try an oh, yeah for us?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There
oh,
we go.
Yeah.
I think Esmeralda's was the deepest.
Oh, yeah.
I think we could just do a whole hour of this.
Oh, yes.
That, right.
Let's just do a whole hour.
Alice was pretty way down there.
That was from Risky Business?
No, it was not. It was from Ferris Bueller's Day
Off. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
One of my favorite, one of my favorite movies of all time. Yeah. I love that movie.
I love that movie.
You know, when that movie's on, there's a couple of movies that whenever they're on and I'm flipping through, I will just stay on the movie.
You can't turn the channel.
There's that movie. There is
40-year-old virgin.
40-year-old virgin.
Oh my God.
Just love Cable Guy is another one. Cable Guy cannot take my. I can watch Cable Guy over and over. Brothers, Step Brothers. I mean, it was on.
You are kidding.
Step Brothers.
I don't
love.
I did
Step
not like
Brothers.
That.
Oh my God, Will Ferrell.
But I liked the one. Oh God.
I'm talking about comedies now because I can get into dramas like Raging Bull, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, and then the Godfather movies.
No, but what's the one that you told me to watch that I fell in love with? The one with the guy from Seinfeld.
Shallow Hal.
Shallow Hal. Love that one.
Gosh, hilarious movie.
Okay, anyhow.
But
we're talking old-time radio, though, not movies, except when you're giving something away.
This is true.
And
we are going to do that.
Ooh.
We are going to give away a MyPillow.
All right.
Am I eligible?
Probably not.
No. Oh, yeah.
But in this hour, we're going to tune into suspense. You won't want to miss that. And it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV show The Get Down, about a group of teenagers who run wild on the streets of the Bronx in the late 1970s.
All right.
And the winner will get a MyPillow, guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you will ever own.
The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Dre Parker in 2010's The Karate Kid.
You know why you only have one student? Because you don't know Kung Fu.
All right, you know who that is? 312-981-7200. Give us a call. Win a MyPillow. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip again.
You know why you only have one student? Because you don't know Kung Fu.
And let's talk to Lisa from Northbrook. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
A fellow Lisa. So Lisa. Who is that actor?
Hey, Lisa.
Who is that actor?
Jaden Smith.
You are right, Lisa.
Oh yeah.
I think we've outgrown it now. You're a winner. You have won a MyPillow. It's guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you will ever own, and you can check them out at MyPillow.com. Thank you so much for calling in and for listening to the WGN Radio Theater.
Great, thanks.
Take care.
She knew it was Jaden Smith.
Definitely.
Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith's child.
Yes.
Who is now a teenager, I guess, because he's in this new series.
Yeah, he's quite an actor.
Yeah, so all right, very, very good. All right, so you know what? We have two tremendous actors in this episode of Suspense. Margaret O'Sullivan and Dame Mae Whitty appear before the CBS microphones. This broadcast goes back to July 27th, 1944. It's called The Black Shawl. It was sponsored by Roma Wines, which I know you had four or five glasses of Roma wines before the show.
You betcha.
I can tell.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you'll like this. Let's go back to 1944. Here's part one now of a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Roma Wines presents Suspense. Roma Wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
Salud.
Your health, senor.
Roma Wines toast the world. The wine for your table is Roma Wine, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is the man in black, here for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California, to introduce this weekly half hour of Suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, Roma Wines bring you as stars Dame Mae Whitty and Miss Maureen O'Sullivan. And so with the performances of these two distinguished leading ladies in the play called The Black Shawl, we again hope to keep you in Suspense.
Listen to me, please. Listen carefully and tell me if I'm right. I say I'm about to be murdered. I'm not certain. No one's even threatened me. But I say I am going to be murdered. This is just a plain, ordinary-looking kitchen that I'm sitting in. But for me, I know it is a death house. If it were only 3 days ago and I could live them all over again. Oh, if it only were. The fair was being held in town, and everyone was gay. And Robert was late as usual, but I didn't care.
Susan, not waiting for Rob again, are you?
Have you ever seen me when I haven't been?
And him a lawyer for the watch factory. Somebody ought to teach him how to tell time.
Hey, how about a dance, Sue? One short one before that boyfriend of yours comes around to steal you away.
Oh, thanks, George, but I'd rather wait. If he's not quick about it, he'll find nothing left to steal except the bench.
All right, but let me know if you're interested in a change of habit.
Hello there.
Oh, hello.
I've been watching you sitting there. And I wondered whom you were waiting for.
Oh, just a friend.
I see. I don't wish to seem inquisitive. Please don't misunderstand. It's only that your face struck me as being unusually bright and alive, as well as being uncommonly pretty. Oh,
thank you.
Now, you see, I have an eye for faces. My son was a sculptor, He worked almost entirely with heads, and my job was choosing them. It's all very foolish, I'll admit. More so since he departed some time ago.
Oh, I am sorry.
Thank you. That's precisely why I was watching you. Of course, I know nothing about you any more than you do of me. But, by the way, what's your name?
Susan Appleby.
Mine is Elizabeth Masters.
How do you do?
I live just the other side of town.
Oh.
Let me come to the point, Susan. I admire your looks and I like the way you act and speak. I'm not a young woman and I'm lonely. I have been ever since I lost my son. I need a companion, someone who can stay with me and help me too. And you resemble closely my very first companion, my best remembered one.
Oh, but
I'll pay you well. £30 a month. Your chief occupation would be to brew me some tea and talk to me. Are you interested?
Well, I have been seeking that sort of a position, but I...
Splendid. You need look no longer.
But you know nothing about me.
I know that I like you and that I want you to accept my offer. I'll return here at the same time tomorrow evening. If you do want the position, please be here. And believe me, I hope you are here. Good night, Susan.
Good night.
See you tomorrow at 8.
All right. I'll be here.
What do you mean you'll be here?
Oh, Rob, you frightened me.
Well, you were whistling our tune, so I thought you were expecting me. What do you think you're doing, making dates with strange women? Believe me, she is a strange woman.
Mrs. Masters? Oh, no, she's nice. And, Rob, she offered me a position.
And doing what?
As a companion. Just what I wanted and at £30 a month, darling.
No small sum, that. Too bad you can't manage it.
But I'm thinking seriously of it, Bob.
Well, stop then. I don't want you ever to have one serious thought about anything.
Now, Rob, I'm going to take it.
What do you know about the old hill?
Nothing yet.
Sue, did you look at the way she dressed? Black from shoes to shawl. Why, the shawl's so large and black, you'd hardly know she had a face.
She seemed charming.
Oh, she might well be, but I'm not so bad myself.
Oh.
And I want you for a companion, too. Let's push the wedding date ahead, darling. Make it any time you will.
Oh, now, we've gone through this so many times, and you know it can't be done. But with the way you're coming along, and with £30 a month additional, why, Rob, in no time at all, we'll have all we need.
You're an awfully stubborn fellow, darling.
Oh, you know I'm right.
How many evenings off would she allow you?
We didn't get that far.
Well, where's the place at, then?
Isn't that strange? She left so quickly, I never had a chance to ask.
Call it off, Sue.
Well, why, Rob?
Well, I don't like it. You know nothing about her, not even where she lives.
Well, I told you I hardly spoke to her. Tomorrow I'll know everything.
All right, my darling, you win.
Oh.
But let me hear from you as soon as you set there.
Well, of course I will. Why, everything's going to be fine.
Ah, I'm silly. Sure it will. Hello, darling.
Hello, Rob.
Everything will be fine for us.
Tonight for Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as stars Dame Mae Whitty and Maureen O'Sullivan, whom you have heard in the prologue to The Black Shawl by R.R. Lewis. Tonight's study in Suspense.
So, I was there waiting, as Mrs. Masters had instructed me, the following night. We got into her car, and she drove us off. It only seemed a mile or two from town, but we twisted and turned so many times that in the dark I became completely confused as to my whereabouts. Then finally, we stopped.
There it is, straight ahead, down the path. Miss Appleby, welcome to Master's Hall. I'm in the parlor, Miss Appleby. Won't you join me in a cup of tea?
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Masters. I'd be very grateful if I might. I love my room.
Good. Mm. Sit down over there opposite me, won't you?
I certainly will. The fire's as inviting as the tea.
I've always had one burning whenever I'm home. I get cold so easily.
Oh.
That's why I always wear this shawl around me. Sugar?
Thank you. No lemon or milk, thanks.
Now, Susan, tell me about yourself. Everything. All you've done. All you see in the future for you.
Oh, there's very little to tell. I've always lived here in town. I expect I always shall remain here.
After your marriage, you mean? I presume you've such intentions.
I expect so.
It is the only thing that matters, isn't it? Having someone to care for.
Yes.
I know. Before my son left me, I desired nothing. The scope of his talent was the world we lived in, and beautiful it was. I suppose love is like talent in that respect. It, too, creates a smaller world within the large one we inhabit, and makes you want it never to disappear.
Did his talents receive recognition?
To a limited degree. Everyone saw in his work the promise of a truly great sculptor. The promise never bore fruit, because he hadn't enough time. Winter came far too early in his life.
How old was he?
I lost him before he was 21.
Oh, Mrs. Masters, that's terrible. So great a waste.
That's it. You'll realize it too, the waste. To lose a useless thing, that can be forgiven. Or if the loss can't be helped, there's nothing we can say. But to cast away genius, to kill it before it's reached its full expression, that no one can forgive. No one can forget.
Oh, now, now, please, Mrs. Masters. We have no control over such matters. They're God's will.
Of course. Thank you, dear. You're very sweet. I wish you more success in the world of your love. I'm sure you'll have more.
Oh, that's kind of you.
Another good man ruined.
I should be insulted.
Ruined by a woman. Oh. That's it. Smile, laugh. Life can be so short. Remember, my boy, enjoy life while you may.
I slept well that first night and did not awaken until almost nine. When I realized how late it was, I dressed quickly and ran downstairs. Mrs. Masters had left a note on the kitchen table telling me she'd gone shopping, that I was to take my breakfast and then wait for her. I looked around to see if I might do something, but everything was in perfect order. I looked for a phone, thinking I'd call Rob, but I could find none in the kitchen or the center hall. Finally, I thought I'd take a look at the outside and get a bit of fresh air. I went to the front door and tried it. It was locked. I turned the bolt and pulled. The door was still locked. I couldn't understand. Then suddenly I realized the door was locked from the outside. I ran to the kitchen, not afraid, but surprised. Then something struck me that I hadn't noticed before. All the kitchen windows were barred. I made a quick dash for the kitchen door.
Why, Susan. Good morning. Did you have a good night's rest?
Oh, yes, I did, thank you.
Fine. But you're trembling. Is there a chill in the house? You really should stay away from the doors.
Oh, I know, but I wanted a breath of air. The front door was locked.
Was it?
Yes.
Oh, I must have done it automatically. You see, I've lived alone for so long, and it's natural for a person who lives alone to lock all doors behind them when they go out.
Why are the windows barred?
Oh, that goes back to the time my son did his work here. We had so much of it lying carelessly about all over the house. So much of value. Anyone might easily have climbed through the windows.
Oh, of course. Oh, it's silly of me. For a moment, though, I felt so much like a prisoner behind those bars.
An unusual experience for you, I take it.
A very unusual one.
Now you're smiling again. That's fine. My boy always liked to see a smile on a woman's face. Without one, he always said they reminded him of death. Yes. Death.
All right, that's the first portion of Suspense with the Black Shawl from July 27, 1944 with Margaret O'Sullivan and Dame Mae Whitty. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. It's 12:35 here on a Sunday. Lisa, we're here on a Sunday.
We're here on a Sunday.
And we're going to be here all the way to 2 o'clock.
If it's Sunday, it must
wait
be.
Wait a minute. Oh, it's WGN. Not Sunday.
It's Monday.
It's actually Monday.
I'm just listening to you. See, I was agreeing with you.
I get so confused about this Saturday, Sunday, Monday thing because I'm never up this late. That's the thing. I'm never up this late.
Well, you are on Saturdays and Sundays.
I know. During the week, though, 10:30, 11, I'm starting to, like, you know, not out.
Oh, well,
not
you off. Do that on the weekends, too.
Mm-hmm, I do.
Here.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
When the shows are on.
I know. I have to keep you awake.
Yeah.
Feed you, like, what are you eating? Deviled eggs or something over
there? I just had a couple eggs. I had a little snack.
A little protein.
A little snack. You know, that helps me stay awake.
Does it?
When you're hungry at night, you fall asleep.
Is that right?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
We're tuning into suspense. You know, we're here we should remind our listeners, just in case this is the first time they heard the show and they're like, what are you listening? I heard some radio drama. Well, radio dramas was the way people were entertained back in the 1930s and 40s, primarily because they weren't really going to the show that much. And radio was free. They had a radio in their house. And so there was no television as yet. Lisa hadn't invented it yet.
Right. Still with the radio.
Yeah. So what they did was they listened to radio dramas, people performing in front of a microphone in a studio at NBC or CBS or Mutual or ABC, and then there were sound effects and music, and you created the pictures in your mind, right?
Right.
Right. Lisa has two brains, so she gets two pictures.
She has like
3D pictures of these radio dramas.
It gets confusing. There's so many pictures in my brain.
Because of the Quasimodo type head that she has.
Yeah, yeah.
It's two heads.
It's very attractive,
but
though, don't you think?
Other people, it is attractive, but other people that are listening in that have one head and one brain, they see these pictures in the theater of their mind, and they're very powerful pictures.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
So there's a text from a 708 area code, and they want to know if we have any radio shows that are similar to what Creature Features used to be.
Well, Creature Features, as you know, was a television show that played scary movies. It was great. And the voice, there was two people that voiced Creature Features. And, well, first of all, the music was Experiment in Terror by, who was the person? I think it was Henry Mancini. Was the writer, that music, bum, bum,
right.
Bum, bum, remember that?
I sure do.
Bum, 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 Experiment in Terror by Henry Mancini. And he also did a lot of other music, but that was a music that he did. But one of the voices to that was Carl Grayson. Carl Grayson appears on a lot of our radio dramas of the Hall of Fantasy. Carl Grayson was a Chicago actor. Mm-hmm. He was based here. And he was the voice for a while of Creature Feature. And that was on WGN television back in the 1960s and 70s. And there was that picture of that guy with the teeth and the hand.
Yeah.
That was Lon Chaney Sr. So there was Lon Chaney Jr. And Lon Chaney Sr. And Lon Chaney Sr. played a lot of, scary movie roles, including that vampire-y guy. And there was just a picture of him, but then they would show these clips, remember, of the Wolfman and the Mummy and all that. And that was a television show. So the closest thing I could think of to a radio show of that would be maybe Lights Out or Inner Sanctum. Yeah, probably.
How about Fangoria?
That's different. Fangoria's Dread Time Stories was a different thing with Malcolm McDowell that I did years ago. But anyway, I digress. So the closest thing of a classic radio show to Creature Features, probably Lights Out or Hall of Fantasy or Mysterious Traveler.
Mm-hmm.
Suspense in a while.
Suspense.
But anyway, these radio dramas that we play here that we pay homage to every Saturday and Sunday were from the 1930s, 40s, some of them into the 1950s, when radio drama really reigned king in the lives and minds of Americans, because television wasn't around.
Right.
And you know, people couldn't really afford to go to the movie theater like they can, you know, now. I mean, people go by the millions and millions. But back then, they weren't going to the movie theater as much. They would go maybe as a real big event, you know, once every couple of months. But radio was there day in and day out, morning, noon, and night for them. And there was kids shows in the morning, and there was, you know, soap operas for the moms. And then there was the Westerns for the dads and the dramas. And we play them all here on the WGN Radio Theater every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. till 2 in the morning. So that's kind of a reset. We just reset there for everyone. That's what we do. Right, Lisa?
Right. And we're lucky to have you to bring them back today, what we used to play in the, you know, 40s, 50s, and 60s.
And we're lucky to have you.
Well, thanks.
As well, as my sidekick, as my Cato, as my Tonto. Right?
As
my second banana.
First banana.
First and second banana. All right, so we're tuning into Suspense. This is the Black Shawl. Good radio drama. Let's go back to 1944 for the conclusion to a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Next day, I wrote to Rob. Please come to see me now, Rob, if you can. Everything's all right. Don't worry about me, but come to me. It's unbelievable, but I must tell you that I still don't know the address here. I cannot tell you how to find it, but someone must know Mrs. Masters and can tell you where she lives. I want to send this off to you now, so I'll close. I can't tell you, darling, how great is my need to see you and my love for you, Sue. Mrs. Masters?
Oh, yes, Susan, what is it?
Where can I post a letter?
Let me have whatever you want sent, and I'll drop it in the box when I go shopping tomorrow.
Oh, I don't want to bother you. I'll take it down myself.
No bother at all. There's nowhere else to post a letter, and I pass the box every day.
Oh, but I'd much rather...
It's settled. Let me have it. It'll be sent early tomorrow.
Oh, of course. Here you are.
Thank you. And, Susan, I dropped my shawl. Would you mind?
Oh, not at all.
Exquisite, isn't it? Will you join me in a cup of tea?
No, thank you. Mrs. Masters... This morning I said I was silly for feeling like a prisoner in your home, but the feeling is still there.
What have I done or said that might create any such impression?
That's not the question I'm trying to answer. I just feel it. The answer I don't know is, what do you want with me? Oh, what was that?
Wait right here. I'll be down shortly.
Where are you going?
Upstairs. But you wait down here, do you understand?
Oh. No. No, I won't stay down here. I'm frightened. I'm coming up, too.
No, dear. Don't worry about the bus. It hasn't broken at all. No, there's not a scratch on it. Dear, dear, please don't cry.
Oh.
Susan, I told you to stay downstairs. What'd you come up for? All right. You know now. Miss Appleby, this is John Masters, my son.
That night at dinner, there were three of us. I couldn't bear to look at him. The twisted face, the dull, glazed eyes, whimpering, grunting, unable even to speak a single intelligible word. And when I saw the two together, she with the horrible black shawl draped around her, I knew for certain that in her own way she was as mad as her son. And I knew more surely than ever how great was my own danger. Late that night, I packed my bag silently and swiftly, and I waited. It was well past midnight before I dared open my door and look out. The house was completely dark, upstairs and down. I felt my way along and started down the stairs. I reached the bottom and went right to the front door first.
Susan!
Oh.
Susan, where were you going? You couldn't possibly know your way about once outside the house. You'd surely have lost your way. Wouldn't she, John?
Stop it! Stop it!
All right. John, leave us now. John, dear, did you hear me?
Miss Masters, you have no right to keep me here if I don't wish to stay. Well, when I accepted this position, I was of the opinion that you lived alone. Conditions have changed, and now I wish to leave.
Oh, please, Susan. Believe me, I don't blame you a bit. But think of me. Just for a single moment. Why do you think I asked you here? Do you believe it's so easy for me, chained to this lost thing? No one to talk to, day or night. I needed someone. I need you now.
You told me he was dead.
I never told you that. Only that he'd left me. And so he has.
Oh, no. No, I won't stay. I'll go mad if I do.
Very well, dear. It's no use trying to argue with you. But stay at least until tomorrow. You could never find your way tonight, and if you stay over, it'll give me a chance to find someone in town.
I'd rather go now, if you don't mind.
Tomorrow night. Just until then. Even if I've no one, well, you can leave after dinner tomorrow. I'll pay you 2 weeks' wages if you do. Please, you can't refuse me that.
Well, I...
Thank you. Thank you, dear Susan.
I shouldn't have stayed. I knew that from the moment I agreed. I slept badly, waking from time to time, certain that I heard odd noises from the next room. Low chuckles, whispered, voiceless mutterings. But the night passed finally, and today was uneventful. When Mrs. Masters returned from shopping in the village, she informed me that my successor would arrive tomorrow morning, and I was therefore free to leave immediately after dinner. She spent the rest of today preparing the evening meal. It was as though it were a special holiday, so great were the pains she took. The dinner turned out to be wonderful, and Mrs. Masters was extremely gracious.
Dear Susan, we drink to you, my dear, dear Susan. To your future, to your man. To your future with your man.
Oh, thank you.
And may you remember this evening all the rest of your days.
You're very
All
nice.
The rest of your days.
Thank you.
Not at all, my dear. Let me pour you out some more wine. And some for you, John.
I'm really sorry that I must hurt you by leaving you this way.
You? Hurt me? Why, my dear, if anyone has been hurt, surely it's you. We frightened you so, made you so miserable. You're the hurt one, Susan, dear. Not I.
Anything I've felt or said is forgotten now. Always when I think of you, I shall remember this evening.
I'm certain of it. And so you may remember better, my dear. Let me imprint the occasion still more clearly upon your mind. Do you know what happening it is we celebrate?
I expected it was my leaving.
So it is. But did it seem likely that you alone would cause so much excitement in our home?
Well,
Miss Appleby, this is the third anniversary of the most important event in the history of Master's Hall. We honor you by asking you to partake of our joy.
And I thank you for it.
No need of that. You need only listen and be silent. 3 years ago, my son was a genius. Today, he is my son. 3 years ago, the world's door stood wide before us. Today, all the shoulders on earth couldn't break it down. It was shut upon us 3 years ago tonight. She slammed it as she left. My son loved her dearly. My first sweet companion. I warned him. I told him that no woman would put up with his temperament. He wouldn't listen. He loved her madly. Madly. The perfect word for it. And for that, she slammed the door on him. Slammed it in his face, his heart, his head. That night he lost the power of his mind. Ever since we waited in vain for its return. But we've honored the occasion. Don't think we've forgotten, eh, John? 2 years ago this evening, on the first anniversary, Sally Thwaite left us. We told her the story. She was overwhelmed. She couldn't bear to stay and left. Quite suddenly. Last year, Catherine it was, Kitty, can't recall her last name at the moment. She wanted to leave us too. How could we refuse? And now, tonight, Susan Appleby. Tonight, Susan, you are leaving us. Where are you going, Susan?
To the kitchen. Excuse me, please. I'm going to be murdered. I can't know for sure. But the way they laugh, the way they look, the way she sits there fingering that ugly, torn black shawl, the shawl that looks like death. What can I think? What can I do?
Susan, there's one thing more. This shawl, so beautiful, so exquisitely wrought. You must surely have noticed that I wear it all the time. It belonged to her, a gift from my son. In her haste, it slipped from her shoulders when she left. So this is all that remains of that lovely, wonderful creature. I should like you to wear it, if only for a moment. You're so much like her, and her memory is John's greatest comfort.
Oh, no. No, don't come near me. Don't touch me.
Please, just around your shoulders.
I won't wear it. Stay away from me. Please don't.
Pardon. Who would be coming here now? John, watch her closely. I look through the window. I don't know who he is, but he must surely have seen the light in the kitchen. I'll just send him away. I'll only be a moment. Watch her, John. If she shouts for him, well, you mustn't allow that, must you, John? So you'd better be still, Susan. Yes? What is it you want?
I beg your pardon. I'm looking for a Miss Susan Appleby.
You won't find her here. I'm sorry.
Well, are you certain of that? It seems to me I recognize that shawl. It was worn by the woman Miss Appleby went to work for the night before last.
Surely this is not the only black shawl in the world. Nor am I the only woman who wears one.
And I've been inquiring in the village, and all the shopkeepers remembered you as the woman who always does. So I followed you here this morning. Then I returned to the village, and now I'm back again.
Well, you can return right to the village. If you must know, Miss Susan Appleby was here. But she was entirely unsatisfied. She's trying to find her at home now.
Well, all right. If she's gone home, I'll see her there. I'm so sorry for your trouble.
Not at all.
Thank you. Good day.
Good day. Susan. Susan, was that you whistling a moment ago? I thought I told you to be still.
Oh, I was nervous. It's a habit of mine.
A very bad one, of which you've many. Among them, no doubt, is that of driving men mad. That one just now. The love in his eyes for you. I've seen that before. In other eyes. I'm so terribly sorry he's gone away. Perhaps he'll return another time.
Stay away from me.
Here now. The shawl's around. Draw it tighter down. Tighter.
No, please. Let me go. Let me go.
You heard her. Let her go. Adams, get him.
Yes, sir.
Draw it quickly, John. Quickly.
No!
You killed him. John! John! John!
Susan, darling.
Oh, have you heard me then?
Of course. This morning I went down to the local constabulary and persuaded Adams here to join me.
I was interested, ma'am, because there had been two disappearances in as many years. And just about this time. This sounded like a third.
It almost ended like the others, too.
Almost, but absolutely. Lock the door. Let's have a hand here. We'll break it down.
All right, oh. Watch out. Once we're in, she's mad and may try anything.
Right.
Let's go now. One, two three. All right. Oh. Well, look at that. The chandelier. Let's cut her down quickly.
It's too late. Her neck's gone.
Rob. The shawl. Black Shaw.
And so closes The Black Shawl, starring Dame Mae Whitty and Maureen O'Sullivan. Tonight's tale of suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear. Dame Mae Whitty appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and is currently being seen in the White Cliffs of Dover. Next Thursday, same time, Donald Crisp and John Loder will be our stars in another unusual study in mystery, suspicion, and dangerous adventure. At that time, you will hear the only ghost story ever to have been staged by Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
That's Suspense from July 27th, 1944, with The Black Shawl, starring Dame Mae Whitty and Margaret O'Sullivan. And you heard Joseph Kearns as the Man in Black. And I'll give you a visual of Joseph Kearns here. Do you remember, Lisa, watching, or sometimes they air him on Antenna TV and MeTV, the Dennis the Menace black and white television show?
I do remember Dennis the Menace.
Well, the little boy that played Dennis the Menace, his next door neighbor, Mr. Wilson, you know, he was always getting in trouble with Mr. Wilson. There was two Mr. Wilsons. There was Gail Gordon, mm-hmm. was Mr. Wilson. So not him.
Right.
But the other guy was Joseph Kearns. And you just heard him as the Man in Black. Joseph Kearns was also Ed the Vault Guard on the Jack Benny program, when Jack Benny would go down to his vault, mm-hmm. and there was a guard down there, and it was the same guy, I believe, on television when they recreated the vault on television as well. Joseph Kearns in a ton of radio shows and TV shows. So I hope you enjoyed Suspense. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. What do we got? Let's hear what this is. Let's see if I can. I was able to identify the other two music themes.
You're losing your time.
This one, I'm not. Hang on. Lisa, do you know what this is? I'm not familiar with this
at all. I don't know.
What is it?
You both know what
it
is.
Oh, wait. I'm going. I want the world to know that.
What is it?
I'm coming out.
Oh, I'm coming out.
I want the world
to know. So is this, hang on, is this...
Gonna let it show. Diana Ross.
Yes.
Ah, yeah. Diana Ross. Love her. She's great.
This is like... Like the instrumental version of it?
Oh, there we go. Well, then let me sing it. Let me sing the words then so we can have everyone turn the radio off.
Want to do it together?
I don't know the words.
That's it. It's just those two lines. I want the world to
know. Lisa, you're pretty good. You know what? You're a good singer.
I used to get paid to sing. I'm just
really?
Saying. 14 years. That's
you were
all.
For 14 years?
14 years.
Somebody paid you?
I know, it's been a while, but...
Were they crazy. Were they hearing impaired?
Probably.
Oh.
Yeah, probably. Well, I fooled them all.
You know, if you're hearing impaired, it's not... This show is not going to help you. I mean, this is... These are all radio dramas. You have to hear these shows.
Well, you can just make it up. That's what it is, the theater of the mind.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way. So in this hour, we're going to have a very funny comedy on the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV show Stranger Things about a young boy who vanishes mysteriously and a telekinetic girl who helps find him.
I like those telekinetic girls. Yeah.
You just like girls.
Especially when they're telekinetic.
Any kind of girl will do. And if you guess this right, you will win a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25.
312-981-7200. That's the number. Here's a hint. This actress played Richard Kuklinski's wife, Deborah, in 2012's The Iceman.
Do not raise your voice to me, Richard.
Richard, what happened to Richard?
I don't know.
All right, do you know who that is? Very good actress. Yeah. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip again.
Do not raise your voice to me, Richard.
Richard, what happened to Richard?
I don't know.
And we've got Tim on the line. I'm guessing it's Morton Grove, but we've got Morton.
No, it's actually Morton down by Peoria.
It's Morton. I've never heard of that. Okay, well, I'm glad you're with us, Tim, from Morton. And I'm wondering if you know that actress.
I think it's Winona Ryder.
You are right, Tim from Morton. You are a winner. I hope you love Lou Malnati's pizza.
I certainly do.
Excellent. We'd love to give you a $25 gift certificate. It's home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. And you can order online at loumalnatis.com and find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Thank you for staying up with us on the WGN Radio Theater.
Awesome. Thanks. I love the show.
Great. Take care,
Thanks,
Tim.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Enjoy the pizza. All right, Lisa Wolf, it's time for the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show. And you have a little connection to this program, right?
I'm very
Tell
connected.
The listeners.
My mom's name is Alice Faye, and she was named after this radio show and this character.
Your mother's middle name is Faye?
It really is.
Oh, wow. So Alice Faye Metenke.
That's true. That's her real name.
Wow. And when she was growing up, she was Alice Faye. I didn't realize the Faye was in there, too.
Yeah, she was named Alice Faye. She's 70-some now.
So if you people want to, listeners, if you want to Google Lisa before she was married, her maiden name.
Lisa, before I was married?
Before you were married, it was Metenke.
Oh, thank you for mentioning that
I
private information.
I would, you know, just
throw it
happily
out there.
Reveal that for you.
Thanks, Carl. And before, can you get any other intimate facts you could think of?
Let me see. You're about 5'4".
I'm 5'5".
5'5".
Close. No, don't talk about
blonde.
The weight.
You're a natural blonde, I'm pretty sure. Because
I am blonde, but I do highlight.
You highlight?
Just to, you know, brighten a little bit.
She has two heads.
I have two heads.
Yeah. She has two heads. She has very deep dimples.
Deep dimples.
Very nice, white, clean teeth. She brushes
you know,
her teeth a lot.
I have to keep up with you.
And manicures. Vinton always has nice manicures going on.
Thanks,
pretty
Carl.
Classy, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl. You're
pretty darn classy.
Pretty darn classy.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And you're very good on the radio.
All right, I'll take it.
You do good radio, Lisa.
Oh, good.
All right.
All right.
So it's time for Phil Harris and Alice Faye. And here's a little background on them. They were really married in real life. Phil Harris and Alice Faye were a married couple. And he was a singer band leader. And she was his sort of actress singer wife. And they got together and did a radio show on NBC beginning in 1948. They played sort of fictionalized versions of themselves, sort of like how Jack Benny and Mary Livingston mm-hmm. were fictionalized versions
right.
of themselves. They were sort of working as a showbiz couple, and they had two daughters. That was what the whole gist of the show was. And Elliot Lewis was Phil's best friend. He was a guitar player named Frankie Remley in his band, and he was the one that usually got Phil into hot water on every episode. And then Leroy from The Great Gildersleeve,
right.
Walter Tetley, played the obnoxious delivery boy, Julius. Julius Abruzzo was his name, and he's hilarious on these shows. He's always getting them into trouble. And it lasted until 1954, so it had a nice run, like a 7-year run. I think you're going to like this. Let's go back to a broadcast date of October 31st, Halloween of 1948. This is called The Election. Here's the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show.
Good health to all from Rexall. Yes, it's Sunday, time for the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, presented by the makers of Rexall Drug Products and your Rexall Family Druggist. And now your Rexall Family Druggist brings you the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, Walter Scharf and his music, yours truly, Bill Foreman, and starring Alice Faye and Phil Harris. It is 4 o'clock in the Harris household, and the children have just arrived home from school. They're an hour late, and Phil and Alice are a little upset.
Well, it's about time you children got home. Where have you been?
Yeah, why were you so late?
The teacher kept us after school, Daddy.
Yeah, she said the homework we did last night was all wrong.
So? My children can't grasp the simple things they teach in the elementary grades. The trouble is, you don't pay no attention. You think you know everything. You won't listen to your elders. Now, after this, if you have any trouble, come to me with your homework.
That's what we did last night, Dad.
Oh. And what makes your teacher so sure it was wrong?
She said George Washington was the first president, not Petrillo.
Well, that's a moot point.
Daddy, the teacher gave us these pamphlets for you to read.
Let me see them, children. These might help you, Phil. Political history of our country, current issues of the political campaign, party platforms.
Hold it, Myrtle, hold it. Just Take it easy. You might not know it, but I don't have to read pamphlets to know what's going on in this country. I'm right up to the minute on world affairs and current events, like every good American citizen should be.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, because there's something I forgot to tell you. The election committee called, and they want us to help out at the election on Tuesday.
Election?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's running for something?
We're voting for a president. They want me to work at the polls, and they want you to go around the neighborhood and get the people to vote.
Oh, but Alice, I can't be bothered with that stuff. Let somebody else do
it. Oh, Phil, that's not the right attitude. This is an important election.
That's right, Daddy. The teacher says it's the duty of everyone to do their part.
Please do it, Daddy. We'll be proud of you. You'll be running the election and helping to pick the president.
Yes, Phyllis, but I can... Running the election, huh? I'll be picking a president, huh? Well, if it's up to me to pick him, we don't need no election. We'll call the whole thing off. I'll make big changes.
Phil.
Yes, big changes. I'll make a clean sweep of the whole country.
I'll Phil, do... stop swinging your arms. If anybody came in and...
Yes, sir, I'll sweep everything.
Look what you did.
Oh, well, gee, I didn't know that anybody was in back of me.
It's my brother William. You knocked him out.
Oh, as I was saying, I'll sweep everybody.
Phil, don't let him lie there. Help him up.
Okay, okay.
How is he, Phil? How is he? Is he unconscious?
With Willie, it's hard to tell. Yeah, he's out all right, honey, but I'll bring him to.
Well, hurry, Phil. Rub his wrist. Slap his face. Not with your fist.
Oh, all right. Come on, Willie. Willie, come on, snap out of it. Willie, come on, snap. I'm sorry it happened. I didn't even know you were there, and I... Well, Willie, say something, Willie. Speak to me.
Good morning, Phil.
For that, I had to bring him to.
I'm glad you're all right, Willie. It was an accident.
I don't believe it. I think he did it on purpose.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. Phil would never hit you on purpose. Would you, Phil?
Nah.
He was just carried away with himself when I told him about his being appointed to the election committee.
Yes, sir, and they showed great judgment. Who could do a better job of getting those women out to vote? Why, I'll have them dames eaten out of my hand. All I got to do is call at their homes, turn on that Harris charm, and I'll have all
hold
them women
it,
coming...
Hold it, Buster. Hold it!
Philip, frankly, I don't think the committee made a very wise choice. The importance of voting in this election should be explained to the people, and I don't think you're capable of doing it. I doubt if you even know who's running.
I don't know who's... Oh, Oglethorpe. Homer J. Oglethorpe, please. Go buy yourself a new snuff box.
Well, if you know, answer me. Who is running?
Oh, you don't know, huh?
Well, of course I know. Among the candidates, Thomas E. Dewey, Harry Truman, Henry Wallace, Norman Thomas, and J. Strom Thurmond.
But of course.
I hope you know, Phil. I didn't want to tell you, but... Several of the committee members questioned your ability to do the job. In fact, a few of them are coming over this evening.
They questioned my ability. My ability. Well. This is the sort of a thing that cuts a man to the quick.
Phil, they're just coming over to find out if you're capable of handling it. You have to have a knowledge of politics in case people ask questions.
Let them ask questions. Let them ask questions. Let them interrogate me.
What was that last word?
Me. Yeah, me. Me. I can explain to those people the importance of voting this year. It's the political issues involved which concern I'll get it. Glad that bell rang. I really don't know too much about this. There must be some way I can find out before election.
Hi, Curly.
Frankie. Hey. Hey, what do you know about politics?
Everything. I probably know as much about politics as I do about music.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Not if there's anything you want to know, just ask me.
I'll take a chance. Now, look. Who are you voting for in the presidential election?
I ain't voting. I don't believe in changing presidents.
Well, some people think we should.
Well, that's because they haven't followed the career of our president as closely as I have. I say the man's doing a good job. And as long as he continues to do a good job, let's keep Hoover there.
Frankie.
Yes?
Mr. Truman is the president of the United States, not Hoover.
Oh, of course. I was thinking of Canada. Now, is there anything else you want to know?
Yeah, have you seen a doctor about that slow leak in your head? Look, Remley, I'm on the election committee, and they're coming over tonight to find out what I know about the different parties.
Curly, your education's been sadly neglected. Didn't you learn anything in school? First thing they taught me was that there are two major parties, the Whigs and the Tories.
Those two I know about.
There's more?
Well, there must be. There are a lot of other fellas running this year. There's Harry Truman, Thomas E. Dewey, Henry Wallace, J. Strom Thurmond, and Thomas.
Thomas?
John Charles. Look, Remley, you know even less than I do about this, and it's our duty to find out about it. I hope you realize the importance of voting.
Well, of course I do. Look at my poor father. One year he didn't vote, and they passed prohibition.
And what's wrong with prohibition? I mean, worse things than that can happen. Like having an atom bomb go off in your hand or something. I mean, after all, Remley, you don't know anything. Don't you know anybody that I can talk to who knows politics?
Well, why do you have to know about it?
Well, because we have to know what we're doing when we vote. If we pick the wrong guy, we can get into as much trouble as people did when they had that Nebuchadnezzar.
What was wrong with him? Well, besides his name.
What was wrong with him? Oh, Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon. There was three children from the land of Israel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. He took a little trip to the land of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. He took a lot of gold and made him an idol, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
And he told everybody when you hear the music of the cornet,
and the flute,
and the harp,
you must fall down and worship that idol, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. But the children of Israel would not bow down, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. You couldn't fool them with a golden idol,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
I said you couldn't fool them with a golden idol,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
So the king put the children in the fire furnace,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Then he heaped on the coals and the red-hot brimstone,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Seven times hotter, hotter than it ought to be,
Shadrach,
Shadrach.
He burned up the soldiers the king had put down,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
But the Lord sent an angel with snowy white wings down in the middle of that furnace, talking to the children about the power of the gospel,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Well, he couldn't even burn a hair on the head of that Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, laughing and talking while the fire was a-jumping,
Shadrach.
The Lord was on their side. Old Nebuchadnezzar called, "Hey there!" when he saw the power of the Lord, and they had a big time in the house of Babylon, Shadrach,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Hey, Curly, I've been thinking. Why do you have to ask somebody about politics? Books have been written on the subject. You must have one in the house.
Yeah, yeah, we must have. Hey, let's look at my book collection and see.
Your book collection?
Naturally. I have quite an extensive library.
Mm-hmm.
There they are. Go ahead, look for yourself.
Oh. Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. Emerson's Essays, Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, Masochistic tendencies of the Malayan.
That one was excellent. A smasher.
You liked it, huh?
Well, that and Homer's Iliad, I just couldn't put them down. I suggest you read it, Mr. Remley.
Yes, maybe I would.
No.
I'll wait till I make the picture.
All right, that's the first portion of the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show from October 31st, 1948. You heard Phil singing Shadrach. I'd never heard that song. A little later, Alice sings You Came from Rhode Island, and then they're all talking about an election, which I thought was kind of appropriate for what's happening in our world with the election coming up in November.
There's an election coming up?
Yeah, I would say so. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Join the Make-A-Wish Illinois Walk and Run for Wishes on Sunday, September 11th at Bussy Woods in Elk Grove Village and bring hope to seriously ill children through life-changing wish experiences. This costumed family walk and 5K run includes entertainment, music, refreshments, and prizes. Register online at illinois.wish.org or call 800-978-WISH. Register today at illinois.wish.org or 800-978-9474 and share the power of a wish.
All right, when we come back from the news, we'll tune into the conclusion to the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show. I'll also tell you what's coming up next Saturday and Sunday when Lisa and I and Elif are back here presenting our Saturday and Sunday broadcasts of the WGN Radio Theater. This is program 104 in the series, and I got to tell you, we have a producer who works night and day for us, Elif, in there, and she stays. When Lisa and I are driving home, Elif is still here working away, preparing our podcast. And that's right, we have a podcast of this show. In fact, the gentleman that I met in the store the other day was a listener of WGN Radio Theater. He asked me if we had a podcast. So not all of our listeners know this. We have a podcast of every show we have ever done here on the WGN Radio Theater, and it's posted within probably 30 minutes after we're done with the show. Right, Elif? I mean, pretty much. Yeah, because I'm driving home, and about halfway home, because it's an hour-long drive, I go and I Bluetooth it, and I listen to how good Lisa is
on
the air.
He likes to hear his voice.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Are you sure?
Well, you know, you do sound different to yourself.
Oh, it's
you know
true.
That? You really do. You sound different.
It takes a long time to get used to hearing yourself.
Yeah.
It's true.
When I listen to you on the podcast, you actually sound good. Lisa.
Yeah.
Which is very surprising.
So you know how to get to that podcast?
Yes, I do. I Google WGN Radio Theater 104. That's what I do.
You know, or you can go to WGNRadio.com and you can go to the schedule and hit WGN Radio Theater. You can go right to the podcast and you can find WGN Radio Theater. So
and speaking of
all sorts of
and
ways.
Speaking of schedule, we get a lot of texts from people before the show begins saying, oh, what's on? What's on the show tonight? Well, it's really simple, folks. There's two ways that you can know exactly what we're playing. We very detailed about what shows we're playing. You can go to our website, which is WGNRadioTheater.com. There are full schedules there many, many weeks in advance. Or you can go to our Facebook page. So just search on Facebook for WGN Radio Theater, and we say what we're playing. We also have pictures there of some of the people. Like, there's a great picture of Phil Harris and Alice Faye. It's
yes,
a really nice, young, glamour shot of them on our Facebook
beautiful,
page.
It's beautiful, actually.
And I think you'll like it a lot. So go there and check it out. Oh, yeah.
This sounds a little
this is
like
very,
a late night
this is groovy.
Show. It's a very late night show.
It's very groovy. It's very hip. It's very shag carpeting with, I can smell incense, and I have my disco ball going on. And this is the kind of music I used to play in my basement growing up. I had a lava lamp, disco ball, and I had incense, shag carpeting, my Billy Joel
albums. It sounds like you're describing my basement.
And I had a couch
bet you did. How did that couch work out for you?
It was a black leather couch that didn't have leather. It had vinyl.
Oh, like leatherette.
Yeah. It was a leatherette couch. We couldn't afford a real leather couch.
Did you have like the plastic over the couch
too? No.
Have that.
But my ma had that on other furniture.
And
but,
some of the good stuff.
But downstairs was kind of like my lair, you know? It was like my man cave growing up. And so,
it's a good thing we didn't know each other.
But here's
back
the thing.
Then.
Yeah, here's the thing. I had all my pictures of my old time radio stars down there, though, too. So I had like this cool like area for my disco ball and my lava lamp and my incense.
Did you have like the Farrah Fawcett kind of thing too? Oh, and the Cheryl Teagues and
well,
all
I
that?
Had this Farrah Fawcett in my bedroom.
Oh, that was reserved for upstairs bedroom. With the red swimsuit.
Oh yeah, that was in my bedroom.
We're into the oh yeah.
That was what I you know, first thing when I walked into my bedroom, there was Farrah Fawcett. You know, when I'd flick off the light, she was the last person in my mind was Farrah. It was Farrah.
When you what?
In my mind, when I'd flick the light off.
Oh, okay.
Go to bed.
Okay.
And then, but downstairs, I had my, was my old-time radio setup. I had all my cassettes and reel-to-reel recorders, you know, my reel-to-reel recorders and everything. But then I had my music area where the couch was, and I had my Billy Joel and Fleetwood Mac, Rolling Stones, Beatles albums.
That's still good stuff.
You know, and my I had a lot of Fleetwood Mac. Did I say that?
I think I said, yeah.
Fleetwood Mac
Double
albums.
Fleetwood Mac albums.
Yeah. The Rumor album.
I mean, everybody had the Rumor album. Yeah.
I had some Elton John growing up, a lot of Elton John.
Of course.
And I liked, you know, all those bands. You know, I liked Led Zeppelin, of course,
The Who.
Love
The Who.
So yeah, that sounded like music I would play in my lair downstairs with the lights out and the disco ball going on. Yeah.
Anything
Gosh,
else going down
fun,
there?
Those are fun days. I wish I would have. You know, I wish I would have like taken more video.
How about
or
Kiss?
Something.
Did you like Kiss?
Not really.
No.
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't. I didn't like that. But what was your
you
favorite?
Like
what was
two
your favorite band? Yeah, like two Kiss. What was your favorite band growing up?
Well, I can tell you the first record that I ever bought, like when I was really, really young, like I would say like 6, 7, that kind of age.
Wow.
I actually remember my very first record.
Was it a 45?
It was a gift. No, it was the whole album.
Okay. What was it?
I was young. Just remember that.
All right.
I was
Peter
very
Pan
young.
Or something?
No,
what?
It was the Carpenters.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Carpenters. Yes.
They were good.
They
I like
were,
the Carpenters.
Yeah, I like the Carpenters.
Yeah,
Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago was
that
great.
That was great.
Yeah. Very cool. All right, well, reminiscing.
Okay.
All right, so it's we're tuning into Phil Harris and Alice Faye. Let's go back to October 31st, 1948. Here's the conclusion of the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show.
Let's see what else you got here. The architectural influence of the Elizabethan era. The Rover Boys at Tehachapi. Curl.
Alice, she goes for that light, frothy stuff.
Of course. Ah, here's a book that'll help us, Curly. The Machination of Political Regimes During the Industrial Revolution.
Ideal for our purpose, Mr. Remley.
Right.
Now, let's see.
What's the matter?
Hey, Remley.
What?
We'll never understand this. The words are too big and complicated for us.
Oh, hello, Frank.
Hi, Alice.
Hey, Alice. I've been thinking about it, and... Hey, maybe I shouldn't serve on that committee.
Oh, but Phil, I think you should. It's important to call at people's homes and get them out to vote.
I know that, but they're going to ask me questions, and if I can't answer them, they won't even let me in their homes.
Hey, Curly, I got an idea. Why don't you practice on Alice and me? Pretend we're a married couple and you're trying to get us to vote.
Okay, Remley, Wait a minute. You and Alice are married?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that.
Don't be a child. We're only playing house. Go on now. You go to the door and ring the bell.
All right. I'll try it once.
Okay, Alice. Now we'll make like we're a married couple.
Mm-hmm.
You put your head on my shoulder.
All right.
I'll put my arm around you like
mm-hmm.
this.
Uh-huh.
You comfy, dear?
Yes, darling.
Wait! We ain't gonna do it that way, Remley.
Please, don't tell me how to play house. Now, go
go on. You go outside and ring the bell, and I'll let you in.
And let me in fast, brother. I don't want no pause between me and the bell ring. And the door opener. Let's make it all work fast, all right? All right, but see you get the door open. I'm going to try. No lulls, Dad. No lulls.
Look, Alice, we got to make it tough for Curly. Yeah. We'll pretend we're not interested in voting, and it's up to him to convince us that we should.
Miss Fay, I brought your groceries in the kitchen.
Oh, thanks, Julius.
Hiya, Mr. Emily. Where's Mr. Harris?
All right, beat it, kid. We're busy. Go on, scram. Scram!
Stop pushing, Mac. I'll go. I ain't overjoyed at the prospect of your company anyway.
Someone's at the door, darling.
Well, answer it, sweetie pie.
Go away, will you? I'm talking to Alice. There's someone at the door, Angel.
I'll get it, honey.
Let's get it together, sweetheart.
Angel? Honey? Sweetheart? This is certainly a nauseating situation. I better sneak up and find out what's going on.
I'll open the door, dearest.
Careful of your itty-bitty hands, Cookie Pie.
I don't know which is more nauseating, the situation or the dialogue.
Coming.
Hello.
Uh-oh, it's Mr. Harris. Now the fireworks start.
Madam, my name is Phil Harris.
Does he have to introduce himself every time he comes home?
I'd like to talk to you, lady. May I come in?
Oh, not now. I'm very busy. Come back some other time.
Well, if I can't talk to you, may I talk to your husband?
He's got to ask her if it's all right to talk to himself.
I'm sorry, but my husband is busy and
Is there somebody at the door, darling? Well, and who is this?
How can he act so innocent?
This is Mr. Harris, darling.
Oh?
Mr. Harris, I'm Mrs. Harris. And this is my husband, Mr. Remley.
I guess I just don't understand these Hollywood marriages.
Well, what's on your mind, Harris?
Well, there's something I got to talk to you two about. There's something I must know.
Uh-oh, here's where the shooting starts.
What do you want to know?
Are you two voting next Tuesday?
Now, there's a shrewd question, Uncle. Nah, I can't stand no more of this. Mr. Harris, can't you see what's going on here?
Oh, Julius, what are you doing in here?
He delivered the groceries. Oh. We thought he left.
Oh. You ought to be ashamed of yourself, Mr. Remley. Calling Miss Faye Cookie Pie right in front of poor Mr. Harris.
Hey, what do you know? The kid's sticking up for me.
Sure, I'm sticking up for you. I can't let your wife do this to you just because you're a poor, broken-down old musician who ain't got enough...
Never mind! Get off my side. Now, beat it, will you, kid? Go on back to the grocery.
Okay,
get out of it. All right. Darn, kid spoiled the whole thing. Now we don't even... Oh. Well, I wasn't doing too well anyway.
Well, Phil, it might help you if you read those pamphlets the children brought home from school. They explain the candidates, their platforms, and how the government is run in a very simple language.
Yeah, the pamphlets. Hey, come on, Frankie. We got just time to read them things before the committee gets here. Come on. See you later, honey.
Gee, it's nice to see Phil take an interest in the election. Maybe he'll find out a few things about our country. It's a big place, and there's a lot to learn, such as...
Copper comes from Arizona, peaches come from Georgia, and lobsters come from Maine. The wheat fields are the sweet fields of Nebraska, and Kansas gets bonanzas from the grain. Old whiskey comes from old Kentucky, ain't the country lucky, New Jersey gives us glue. And you come from Rhode Island, and little old Rhode Island. Rhode Island is famous for you. Cotton comes from Louisiana, gophers from Montana, and spuds from Idaho.
They plow lands in the cowlands of Missouri,
where most beef and for roast beef seems to grow.
Grand Canyons come from Colorado, gold comes from Nevada.
Yes, and divorces also do. And you come from Rhode Island, and little old Rhode Island is famous for you.
Pencils come from Pennsylvania,
no.
Vests from West Virginia,
oh, no.
And tents from Tennessee.
They know mink where they grow mink in Wyoming.
A camp chair in New Hampshire, that's for me.
And did you know that Tomino?
Yes.
It comes from Minnesota. A coats come from Dakota. But why should you be blue? For you come from Rhode Island. Don't let them ride Rhode Island. She's famous for you.
Hey, Frankie, did you finish reading all the pamphlets?
Yeah.
Pretty interesting, aren't they?
If you say so.
Well, they are. According to these pamphlets, almost any kid in this country has a chance to grow up and be president.
Not having any kids, I ain't interested.
But supposing you did. Just picture it, Frankie. Someday you get married, and after a year or two, the stork comes to your house, and who knows? The little one might grow up to be president. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah. I'll have the only stork that ever grew up to be president. Look, Curly, forget my kid and think about your committee. They'll be here soon. Now, can you memorize everything you read?
Well, I hope so. There's an awful lot to remember, though.
All right, I'll brief you. First, our form of government. It's divided into three branches, legislative, executive, and judiciary. You know all the candidates and their different platforms, and of course you know that we don't elect our president through popular vote. We send members to the Electoral College who in turn elect the president. You follow me?
Yeah, I got most of it. But what was that stuff after you said, I'll brief you?
I'll tell you once more. The government is the...
Wait a minute. Too late, Frankie. Now, there's the committee.
Oh.
I think I'll remember everything if they'll just start asking questions fast before I forget.
Well, don't wait. Start
I'm
talking politics as soon as they come
I
in.
I will.
Oh, Phil. Phil, the committee is here. Mr. Johnson, Mr. Kerwin, this is my husband, Mr. Harris.
How do you do, Mr. Harris?
How are you, sir?
Our government is divided into three branches. The legislative, the executive, and the judiciary. How am I doing with my answers, Alice?
Not bad, considering they haven't asked you any questions yet. won't you be seated, gentlemen?
Thank you, but we can't stay long. Now, Mr. Harris, we're merely here to find out if you're familiar with election procedure.
We know you are, but some voters might ask silly questions like, how is a president elected?
Well, that I know. Now, the president is not elected by popular vote. Instead, we vote to send members to an electrical college. And after they graduate from college, they vote for us, and that's why it takes 4 years to elect the president.
Yes. That's a very keen analysis.
Yeah, isn't it? Mr. Harris has a great brain. Someday we hope to find out who graded it.
Mr. Harris, do you know anything at all about politics? Do you know who you're going to vote for yourself?
Naturally. I've made up my mind, and I know exactly who I'm going to vote for.
Well, off the record, I hope you're voting for Mr. Truman.
Of course. Who else?
I think Mr. Dewey is the better man.
That's what I said. Mr. Dewey, by all means.
Of course, there are people who like Mr. Thurman.
And I'm one of those people.
How do you feel about Lassie?
You couldn't find a better man than... Cut that out!
Mr. Harris, according to you, you're voting for three men. Do you think we should have three presidents at the same time?
Why not? While one is joining Indian tribes and the second one is out fishing, the third one can stay at the White House and get some work done.
Mr. Johnson, I think we've heard enough. Shall we go?
Yes, yes. Mr. Harris, I don't think you're the man for the election committee. Unfortunately, we can't prevent you from voting yourself, but we... we can keep you from lousing up everybody else. Good night, sir.
Oh, but gentlemen, Mr. Harris...
Good night, Mrs. Harris. You have our deepest sympathy.
Phil, you didn't know what you were talking about at all.
Well, I was trying to...
Being on the committee isn't too important, but before you vote, I wish you'd find out more about the candidates.
You're right, Alice. You're absolutely right. And I'll admit I don't know too much about them, and that it's our duty, and it's the duty of everyone, to vote intelligently on Tuesday. I'm going to start reading up on the candidates right now.
Oh, me too. I didn't realize it before, but now I know it's important to pick the right man.
Well, come on, Frankie. Let's study these facts. Now, this explains the platforms of Mr. Truman, Mr. Dewey, Mr. Wallace, Mr. Thurman, and Mr. Frankie, what are you doing?
Well, I'm choosing the man I'm going to vote for.
Well, how are you doing it?
I'm putting all the names in a hat, and I'm going to pick one.
Oh, Remley, you can't do it that way.
It's too late. I already picked the name out. Here it is. I'm voting for... It's funny, I didn't even put this one in.
Who is it?
Some guy named Stetson.
You picked out the label. Remley, sit down. We're going to read this book right now.
Good night now for the makers of Rexall drug products and your Rexall family druggists. Look for the blue and orange sign in their windows. It means they carry the 2,000 or more Rexall drug products. And these 10,000 family druggists tell you, you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall. This is Bill Foreman wishing good health to all from Rexall. Sunday is fun day on NBC. Stay tuned to this station for the Edgar Burke and Charlie McCarthy show, which follows immediately.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show from Halloween, October 31st, 1948. A show called The Election, starring Phil Harris and Alice Faye, real-life couple. And a couple of interesting notes on this show. Gail Gordon, who, of course, was Lucille Ball's foil for years, played Mr. Scott. He was Mr. Rexall. He was the sponsor, Mr. Scott. He would come on the show every once in a while. He wasn't a regular, but he was on every maybe once a month. But one of the regulars on this show was the announcer, Bill Foreman. That guy who you just heard announcing on this was the Whistler. He was the voice of the Whistler. So he was a dramatic actor as well as the announcer. And Elliot Lewis, one of the most talented men in all of radio. He was a producer of suspense for many years. He was a director. He was married to Kathy Lewis, who was also on a million radio shows. But Elliot Lewis, who played Frankie Remley on this, was a great dramatic actor. But he was the star of The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen. He was the producer and director of suspense for many years. Just sort of Mr. Radio, Elliot Lewis. I had the great pleasure of interviewing him years ago, and what a fascinating, sweet man. And he played Frankie Remley on this episode. Phil Harris and Alice Faye, hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. When Lisa and I are back here on Saturday and Sundays, we have Box 13, The Life of Riley, Gunsmoke, Nightbeat, My Friend Irma, and Lights Out. But right now, let's talk with Nick DiGilio. He's back from vacation.
Hey.
And ready to rock
I'm
and roll.
I'm here. Yeah. I'm live. Yeah.
Yes. So what's going on, Nick? Did you have a good vacation?
I did. It was busy. I did a lot of stuff. Last weekend, I was one of the hosts all weekend at Flashback Horror Convention, which I do every year.
Was there any horror stars there?
Or a lot.
A few. Just name a few for me.
Let's see. Nev Campbell, Skeet Ulrich, and Matthew Lillard from Scream.
Sure.
Were there.
Nev Campbell, huh? I date her.
Yeah, she's
yeah, I definitely did.
She's beautiful.
Yeah,
she's a nice girl too.
Yeah,
and so you know, a lot of stuff happened there over the weekend, and then Monday I co-hosted a screening with Dan Epstein of Bad News Bears.
Oh man,
at the Music Box, we had
sure.
a great turnout for that.
Wow,
and then Tuesday,
40 years ago,
40 years if you can believe Jeez. That. And then Tuesday night I had my film club screening of RoboCop.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a busy time, and then I just had a few days off.
Weber or something?
Peter Weller.
Yeah, Peter Weller. Yeah
Peter
RoboCop.
Weller.
And then they came out with a new RoboCop, right?
Well, there were three movies, and then it became an animated TV series as well.
Ah,
it was
okay.
RoboCop 2 and RoboCop 3.
Very cool. So what's on the show this morning?
Movie reviews, we're back, and my dad will call in and tell a joke. It's your basic Monday.
Yeah, okay,
so we're back.
Cool.
We're getting back into the groove of things.